Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Good evening, I'm Roger Watterson. On agenda, with 52 days to go before polling day in the 2011 general election, I'm talking to another of the Council of Ministers in the outgoing Brown government who's seeking re-election. He entered the House of Keys at a by-election and has represented Ramsey without a break since 1984. The lengthy list of his various duties through those 27 years is impressive and includes Minister for various departments, tourism, industry, home affairs, treasury, and now the new Department of Economic Development. Alan Bell, good evening to you.
Good evening, Roger.
Here we are with you asking the citizens of Ramsey to appoint you to serve for another 5 years at the sharp end of Manx politics. Now, it's easy to understand if you'd said that you'd done enough now, you have a life of your own, but maybe time of life you'd like to do something else. So here we are, back again on the hustings. Why?
I think we're just coming off the back of the most successful period the Isle of Man has ever known, economically and in many other ways. However, we are now running into very choppy waters. We've the problems with VAT, we've had problems with the world economy around us, and I think the next government, above all, is going to need all the experience it can get to try and steer us through this difficult time. It needs leadership, it needs experience, it needs a cool head in difficult circumstances. I have been through all those circumstances, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years since the credit crunch and the world recession, and I think that experience sets me up now to, I hope, give some positive contribution to the government in the future.
That sounds a little like the First World War slogan, your country needs you.
Well, I don't really mean that, but I am a passionate believer in the Isle of Man. I have worked all my adult life to improve the position of the island, both economically and socially, and I think over those years we've achieved a great deal. It would be heartbreaking now to get to this stage, after all the pain and hard work that's gone in, to see it unravel because of the challenges which now face us. We need experience, we need cool heads, we need leadership to get us through this, and I think we also need a united team in Tynwald, in the House of Keys, to take us forward. Otherwise, we will have a very rocky 5 years.
Well, a recent release from Hugh Davidson's survey reveals that you come top of the list in the survey preference for the next chief minister. So when you're talking about cool head and safe pair of hands and this sort of thing, do you really want the job?
Well, my first loyalty, obviously, is to the people of Ramsey. They've returned me now for the last 27 years, and it is my first ambition to be re-elected in Ramsey. But clearly, these are very unusual, very challenging times, depending on the makeup of the next House of Keys, and bearing in mind, of course, it is Tynwald that appoints the next Chief Minister, if there was sufficient support there, I would certainly consider the role, yes.
But once you've got the job, how effective can a Chief Minister be? I remember Donald Gelding once said that his main weapon is hiring and firing.
A Chief Minister can be as effective as the Chief Minister wants that role to be. There are periods, perhaps, when a Chief Minister is little more than a chairman or a manager. There are other times when a Chief Minister has to be a leader, to have a clear vision as to where the Isle of Man needs to go, to be prepared to make hard and often unpopular and sometimes painful decisions. But also, he needs to be a good communicator. He needs to take not only Tynwald with us, but the majority of the people of the island needs to understand why these decisions are being made. So we need a leader, someone who is prepared to do all those things and take the Isle of Man forward. And this is one of those times, I think.
Now, you talk about knowledge and information and why decisions are being made. Do you think that that was effective in the last House? Because I hear so many people saying that they don't understand what government is doing.
I think the government of the last 5 years has probably been more successful than most people will give it credit for. However, where it has failed miserably, I think, for most of those 5 years, has been to explain the rationale behind many of the policies which have been developed. We've been too defensive on many, many occasions instead of being outward, open to people and explaining why certain actions have been taken. And I think, again, this next government, above all, has to be good at communication. We have to take the people with us. We have to trust the people. And in return, people have to understand that there are occasions when certain information has to stay confidential. But in general, I think we did fail in the last 5 years to communicate, and that is a major challenge for the new government as it comes in.
All the systems, all the facilities, all the senior civil service, all the press offices, they'll all be the same in the next house as they were in the last house. So how, if you were Chief Minister, would you change the mindset of those people?
I think we've heard a lot during this election and beyond about the scope and structure of government. And it is absolutely right that we review both of those areas now in the new House. The one thing, though, that hasn't been referred to and is absolutely fundamental to everything we do is the culture of government. And unless you change the culture of the way we do business, of the way the civil service thinks, of the leadership given to those civil servants by ministers and chief executives, nothing will change. You can have all the structures you want, but if you've still got the same culture, you're not going to be able to deliver a more effective service, and you're certainly not going to be able to communicate with the people in the way that is absolutely necessary in the time ahead.
But there's always a resistance from the administration, from the establishment, any form of change. The status quo, the time is, we hear Yes Minister phrases like the time is not right, it's not appropriate at the moment. I mean, we've all heard these phrases.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that inertia is something that we're going to be up against. But this is one time where it is totally unacceptable to continue in the same old role of doing things. We've got to challenge all the old ways of doing business. We've got to try and deliver public services in a more effective, cost-effective manner. We have to break down the barriers to new ways of thinking, more streamlined ways of thinking, and above all, being alert to the fact that we should not be working in secret, that the public have a right to know what we're doing.
So that's the essence of the Chief Minister. That's the leadership role.
Yes, very much so. The Chief Minister will have to lead from the front. He will have to lead by example. He will have to drive these changes forward. This is not the time for a Chief Minister to come in as a manager or as a chairman. He has to lead his Council of Ministers. And you need the vision from the Chief Minister and a collective support from the Council of Ministers committed to that vision to drive forward this change.
Have we lost the political essential of leadership, do you think, in general politics these days? Too much census government? Consensus?
Yes. You get the government you need for the times, I think. And the last 10 or 15 years, the Isle of Man has been incredibly successful economically. Government revenues have been strong. We've had very progressive changes in our social legislation, etc. We've had a relatively easy run, if you would call it that, for the
Some of those revenues, I'm sure, are linked to the VAT that we no longer have.
Certainly, VAT has been a major contributor to those revenues. There's no question about that. But they were good times. We perhaps needed managers during that period. Perhaps we could have done with a bit more leadership, but nevertheless, we are where we are. The important thing to remember, though, the absolute key message in this election is that the world has changed. It is no longer acceptable to go on doing the same things as we've done in the past.
This issue of leadership, though, crisis of leadership, is throughout the world at the moment. I mean, if you look at the EU, particularly in France and Germany, Obama failed to reach an early deal with the Republicans, causing considerable damage to Wall Street. The IMF is presently creaking and bothered with scandals with various people. And leaders tended to be shifting away from bold decisions and lacking the gritty determination to actually carry them out. The one thing that I find amazing is that with serious an economic turndown and a double dip, likely in the UK government, and it turns all its energies and attentions to phone hacking.
Yes, it is astonishing how priorities develop in situations like this. And this, again, is where the Isle of Man has got to be very careful that we don't turn in on ourselves after the election and go back to our usual constitutional debates and lose sight of the fact that it is vitally important that we get the economy going. We have to rebalance government revenues. There is no doubt at all that worldwide there is a shortage of leadership, an absence of leadership, and we're getting paralysis on the back of that, and particularly that is very obvious in Europe at the moment with the problems over the Greek situation and further.
There's more than that there, isn't it? Because that's not just a lack of leadership, it's political self-delusion as well.
Yes, and I think you also need to recognise that the era that we're in now and have been in since 2008, 2009 is uncharted territory for most governments and for most political leaders. They're feeling their way to a solution in a way that they've never had to do before. So it is trial and error, and certainly the challenges of the world economy and the international downturn is starting to sort the men from the boys. And there are very few men starting to appear on the world stage in terms of international leadership.
When you look at the larger countries, their cabinets and the various committees and departments that have evolved from there are very often people of considerable experience. You might not agree with them, but they're also considerable education and talent. But for the way people are elected to the House of Keys, you do expect to have at your disposal quite a mixed bag of talent in the end. In times gone by, we've had a significant proportion of members who were lawyers, accountants, doctors, successful businessmen and other disciplines. And what I find alarming, in the past 5 years, I've discussed many issues with most of the members, and alarming number cannot read a balance sheet, don't know how the taxation system works, and don't understand fully the constitutional position of the Isle of Man, and totally rely on their officers for information. How can one man at the top alter that?
Obviously, the makeup of the House of Keys, and from that the makeup of Tynwald, will be entirely at the behest of the people of the Isle of Man and the candidates they return, and the priorities perhaps that the electorate see that their candidate should promote. My passionate belief in this next 5 years is we need a government of all the talents. We need to draw the best out of what we have in the House of Keys, what we have in Legislative Council, but we also have a vast wealth of talent living on this island with experience in a whole host of areas which are living quietly here below the radar, who I think we can bring in to help us and advise us through these times. Now isn't the time to stand on ceremony. We need to bring in all the people we can to build a strong advisory group around government to help us to get through these challenges. No one of us in the Isle of Man has the range of experience perhaps it's called for to face the huge challenges ahead, both for the Isle of Man and on a world stage. But we need to draw on the best advice we can possibly get from our own people.
It seems to me, you may correct me now, but it seems to me that the previous administration were quite happy to call on advice from paid consultants, but were wary of, indeed, if not rejected, offer of advice from the outside community.
We probably weren't as proactive in using the talent which we've had available. I know myself through my experience in 9 years in Treasury and now in economic development, we do have some very experienced, very talented people who are very willing to give of their time and of their networks and connections to help the Isle of Man. We have to perhaps draw a line under what's gone on in the past. It's the future we're connected with now. We've got to stop fighting old battles, putting aside old prejudices, and welcoming these advisors, these new people, into the arms of government to help us. We are, I know it's cliched now, but we are all in this together. We need to pull together as an island and unite behind the government to try and find a solution for the way ahead.
Although freedom of information was high on the list of public priorities of the last election, and it only appeared at the very last sitting of this House, I hear many people saying, well, that is an example of how when people promise you the world when they're campaigning, but when they're elected, they take no notice of you, because freedom of information did come top of the agenda, or close to it, at the last election.
Yes, undoubtedly, the Freedom of Information Bill will come into play. It'll be in the House of Keys again in the autumn. It'll be law by early next year, I would imagine. There have been concerns about how that's going to be constructed, and it's most important that it's handled in a positive way. There are obviously areas of commercial sensitivity that we don't necessarily want to have in the public arena. There are actually areas of political sensitivity, particularly when we're dealing with off-island governments, the United Kingdom, the European Union. Not all our cards necessarily should be played face up, so we have to be careful how we handle that. And looking at the introduction of this legislation in Jersey, I think the cost of introducing it there was estimated to be between £1 and £2 million. And obviously, in the present climate, there's been a concern about the cost of it. But overall, the argument in favour of freedom of information is solid. And as long as it's implemented properly and not abused, I think it can only help to improve the communication and, most of all, re-engage with the public, rebuild the trust of the public in government. And by being open and as transparent as we feasibly can be, then I think this has to be a way forward.
The previous House also did seem to find legitimate questioning when answers weren't being given. A little bit of probing sometimes, because there's not a huge amount of investigative journalism goes on over here. As damaging, questions in the House which didn't fit the Council of Ministers' line. I mean, we had one quite recently when there was all sorts of questions about the film industry. The answers, I'm not too sure what they were, but I know the questioner was lambasted for asking it.
Yes, again, this goes back to the comments I was making about the freedom of information. Government, even in the last 5 years, does not have a problem with legitimate questioning. But members also need to understand that there are sometimes external agendas running, external, and by that I mean with the United Kingdom and further afield, that we don't necessarily want to have certain information in public at a particular time while negotiations, for example, are going on. We need to be sensitive about that. Government has never deliberately or consciously hidden that information, but it is being circumspect in some cases for a specific reason, and that is to protect the welfare of the Isle of Man. No other reason.
Well, you talk about bringing in outside help, of course. That's at the time when outside help might be needed, when negotiations are underway, because the whole skill base can't be in the civil service very often. There are very experienced people in the diplomatic service retired and living here.
Absolutely. And I know through my own experience over the last decade, through Treasury and through economic development, that you have to learn on the job as far as international negotiations and diplomacy is concerned. But we have very few people within the existing House of Keys and Tynwald that have actually had that experience. I think in the time ahead, the leadership needs to engage more with other members of the House of Keys to begin with, to give them more experience in dealing with off-island activities. But also, again, we do have people on the Isle of Man with good connections politically as well as in the business world, and we ought to be able to draw on them whenever we can.
It was always in the past, not done very often, but it was done when occasion demanded, that whoever it was, the Chief Minister, or even if you go back far enough, the Chairman of Executive Council, used to be able to pick the phone up and talk to a minister who, in the UK, talked to somebody of importance in order to try and solve an issue before it went too far. It does seem these days that everything's done through channels and that our politicians are not meeting like for like, and two sets of civil servants are meeting with a different position. I mean, the UK civil servants will be looking after the UK taxpayers' interest, not ours. I mean, has there been a failure at political communication?
No, I don't think so, but you have to recognise that times have changed. It's all very well saying that you should pick up the phone to your UK ministerial counterpart, but that, of course, presumes that your ministerial counterpart will pick up the phone at the other end and speak to you. The process is quite clear these days. It's very difficult to actually get a meeting with the key ministers, especially in the midst of what might be delicate negotiations. The best way around this is to step up our representations, our lobbying in Westminster, in Brussels, even in Washington, over a period of time, so that we are building up friendships during the good times, so that when difficulties do hit, we have a better understanding and a better relationship.
Why has it changed now? Why has it changed since the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, where ministers and before them their counterparts could talk to people that mattered at the departments?
I think perhaps the status of the Isle of Man has changed since the 60s and 70s. We are an international player now. The issues we're dealing with are not what used to be the equivalent of local authority issues. We're dealing with life and death issues for the Manx economy. We are dealing with issues which, in areas that we are involved in, which potentially could embarrass the United Kingdom as well. So this is part of grown-up politics. The Isle of Man is maturing now. It's not what it was 20 or 30 years ago. It's changed beyond all recognition since I was first elected.
But the people who are listening tonight will have a vote in the Isle of Man. Yes. They don't have a vote in the United Kingdom. They can't go to a UK MP and ask him to intervene for them. They have to rely on the Isle of Man to do it. Now, another part of Hugh Davidson's People Power survey came out today, and it actually says that 79% of those sampled consider that the Isle of Man government's relationship with the UK was just above average, but most of them thought that the relationship had deteriorated, and the performance, not necessarily the performance domestically, but the performance internationally, was fairly mediocre. It's been described earlier on as fielding a second division team on a Premier League pitch.
And that is spoken out of ignorance, I have to say. The Isle of Man has done incredibly well over the last 10 or 12 years in protecting the Isle of Man's reputation with the OECD. And if you remember, 12 years ago, the Isle of Man was on an international OECD blacklist. We worked our way assiduously through the OECD, through the EU, through Westminster, and indeed with the US, to improve the Isle of Man's image, to get a better understanding. I have travelled ceaselessly over the last four or five years to do that. We now have, when in 2009, when G20 were meeting in London, the Isle of Man automatically went on their whitelist, and the US has recently changed its legislation, or proposed legislation, which has removed the Isle of Man from a blacklist too. We work very hard internationally. The point you make has the relationship between the Isle of Man and the United Kingdom deteriorated. I think it's certainly not as trusting as it was 4 or 5 years ago. I think the relationship certainly has changed. The perhaps slightly naive approach that the Isle of Man had in the past, those days have gone. We have got to recognise that we don't necessarily have friends in the UK. Excuse me. And we have to earn that friendship, and we have to recognise that we have to represent ourselves as best we can internationally and not necessarily rely on the United Kingdom all the time.
Right. Well, I ask these questions instead of domestic issues because it seems that at the last election, Manx Radio's exit poll showed that 65% of the people voted on local issues. Most candidates who are canvassing now say that the whole position has changed. Yes. And people are taking longer to talk to them, and it's mainly about national and international issues and predominantly the economy. And the next round, they're worried about the next round of pressures on the economy. Mm-hmm. Is one going to come?
There is always pressure on the economy, and from now on, and we've seen the events only in the last few days, there is a possibility that the world could slip back into recession again. Certainly the UK is being talked of having a double dip recession. If that happens, it will affect the Isle of Man. We have got to put the economy absolutely at centre stage from now on. All our ambitions in developing and expanding public services, or even maintaining public services, will hinge on having a successful economy. And those people who believe that we don't need any more growth, that we don't need any more people, we don't need any more development, frankly, sadly, are deluding themselves. We have to have a strong focus on the economy. We have to diversify into new areas. We have to recognise that some of the areas we have, we may actually lose.
Well, we've heard this, of course. This has been a long tale. It's been the same sorts of messages in different ways have been going now for 10, 15 years. And now, here we are, back against the wall. What do you say to those people who would say to you, well, this is fine, can't disagree with you, but why have it taken so long to get round to it?
We haven't. We've been doing this for the last few years. This has been fundamentally part of my remit for the last 10 years. And this is why the Isle of Man will not go into recession, one of the very few places in Europe that hasn't been into recession. It's why we still currently have net growth of between 4 and 5%, one of the fastest growing economies in Europe, and why we still have extremely low unemployment of around 2%. We have been incredibly successful.
It's interesting that Canada, Brazil, Norway have all adopted extremely frugal policies and are now enjoying fast expanding economies, and they also have stable banks, as it happens, as well.
Yes, that helps.
So here we are now on the cusp of an election. You've been representing Ramsay, but you've been a minister for a while. Now, we've talked completely about national issues. We just have about a minute to go before the end of the programme, Alan. What do you say to the people in Ramsay who now say, well, that's very interesting, he's dealt with all these international issues, but why should I invest my vote in him when I live in Ramsay?
Well, first of all, the growth in the economy, a successful economy, a balanced government budget will provide strength for all our people in Ramsay. It provides employment opportunities, full employment, Over the last 5 years, it's generated well in excess of £50 million worth of government investment in Ramsey for new housing, new swimming pool, a variety of other benefits. And we have to maintain that growth. My commitment to Ramsey is absolute, as it always has been. And I want to see full employment in our town. I want to see new jobs created there and a continuation of the regeneration, refurbishment of the town centre.
And do you think you'll be able to achieve that?
Absolutely.
Our guest in this edition of Election Agenda was the retiring member of the House of Keys and Minister at the Department of Economic Development, Alan Bell. He's seeking re-election in September to serve the constituency of Ramsey. I'm Roger Watterson. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.